Good morning, this is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Shalom, Lenny.
Shalom, Joan.
Well, we're going to continue your fascinating discussion. I don't know where it's taking us to, all over the place. And it started off with talking about the Peter Gluckman's report. And where did we stop?
Well, we ended sort of in the middle of something, but what I really want, I wanted to shift gears at this point. So the Peter Gluckman report basically was commissioned, as a big report commissioned to look at understanding what the reasons behind our unreasonably high teen suicide rate. And the primary finding of the Peter Gluckman report was that we seem to have shifted from a society based on support to a society based on punishment. And this shift in our culture, the way we interact with each other as human beings, has basically depleted people of hope. And fundamentally, people need to believe that, well, the underlying biology of why hope is a biological need and not a want is because what drives human behavior, what drives behavior of all biological creatures, is preservation of self. Humans, unlike tomatoes and E. coli and dogs, wake up in the morning and realize that preservation of self is actually a lot of work. And we have to ask questions about why bother. And so humans need to know that the goal is realistically achievable and the consequences of failure are not insurmountably catastrophic. And this is what we've lost. This is what the Gluckman Report has pointed out that we've lost by drifting too far in terms of punishment and too little in terms of support. And so we talked last week about how this relates to understanding working with children and working with our teens, but I wanted to talk a little bit this time about how we create this as a leadership culture from the top down.
So this is leadership in hope?
Leadership,
or hope in leadership?
Leadership creating hope. So basically, the idea here is the leadership of an organization, of a group, sets the example, sets the paradigm for how the individuals in the group will interact. And if you design, if you set the group up with different, in a different way, you can, the people in the group will interact differently. So if I just go back and look at basic leadership theory, okay? And there are two paradigms for understanding leadership theory if you look at the literature. And one of them is the seven sources of power for leaders. And the other one is the seven styles of leadership.
Is that seven because it's a good number?
Look, this is just what the guys in the business schools created, okay?
Okay.
Don't ask me why they've got seven. Now, turns out I've studied this, and I've worked with this, and I've looked at how this interacts in various places where I've interacted with people. And I find that the seven sources of power are incredibly useful and pragmatic. They're very, very specific to things that you actually do that have measurable and recognizable results. The seven styles of leadership are total BS. They're completely and utterly useless and totally meaningless. And I've never found a way to actually make them functionally useful. They're great for textbooks, but when you actually put them into a workplace or into a society or a club or a family, they're totally meaningless. So let me explain. So the seven sources of power. You have the first source of power is called legitimate power. And I've summarized the literature so in little quips. Basically, legitimate power is I'm the boss, do what I say. Now, John Key was very good at that. He would say, I'm prime minister, you have to do what I'm saying. Okay? And when that leads to very specific consequences in terms of the culture of the organization. People listen to you because you're the boss. You're a second in command. Nobody cares. You know? People don't do things because it's the right thing. They do things because the boss said so. That's what we got to do. Boss turns his back, and all of your team are totally uninterested in doing what you said because they're only doing it because the boss said so. Okay? The second form of leadership is called reward leadership. do what I say and I'll give you something you want. I'll pay you. I'll give you a job. I'll give you a raise, whatever. Okay? Reward leadership is very well understood, and it works really, really well as long as you're watching. Again, if you turn your back, everything falls apart because they're only doing it for the for that particular reward. Coercive leadership is the other side of reward leadership. Do what I say or I'll do something you don't like. I'll fire you. I'll cut your pay. You'll lose your bonus, whatever. You'll be grounded. You know, I'll take away your cell phone. Okay? So coercive leadership works, again, as long as you're looking. Now, simplistic leadership, which could often called a boss style, basically you work with, these are the three that you work with. It's legitimate. I'm the boss. If you do it, I'll do something you like. I'll give you a reward. I'll give you an allowance. If you don't do it, I'll do something you don't like. I'll take away your privileges. I'll dock your pay. And this is how most simplistically people will understand leadership, okay? But what you can start to see is this creates, if that's all you use, it creates a very mean-spirited culture for the group. And the group is constantly looking out for what they can get for themselves and what they can get away with. So then we get into the other forms of leadership. Now the next one is these leadership power styles. The first three are the standard ones. The next two are the ones that more sophisticated leaders will use. And the last two, you'll find that the literature sometimes argues doesn't exist. All right? So the next two would be associative leadership. Everybody's on my side. All the important people are with me. So you might as well join me and do what I say. Again, John Key was actually very good at that. John Key made a point of pointing out that all the most wealthy people in the country backed him. And therefore, he must be doing the right thing. And therefore, you need to get in line with him and do what he says. Okay? And associative leadership can also be very powerful. So in my community work, people, because I do a lot of community work and a lot of people know who I am, people in my community look up to me and they listen to me because they assume that I know all the important people. Whether or not I do or not is another story. So this is not me telling them, but this is just a level of power that I have in the community because people believe that important people will listen to me. Okay, so this is associative power. So it's not all evil, all right? It can be very positive or very negative or just neutral. The next one is called expert leadership. This is my favorite. I know what I'm talking about. Do what I say. Now, being one of these fools who has more letters after my name than in it, I tend to use expert leadership a lot. And a lot of people really do believe that, really follow what I say because they really do believe I know what I'm talking about. So it tends to be one that I tend to lean on a lot. Okay? But you'll find that those tend to get people in a group a lot more aligned to actually do what the group needs. So everybody in the group voted for this, so come on, let's get it done, guys. This is what we really want to do. This associative leadership. This is what's really going to get, this is the best thing to do, this is what's really going to get us what we want. Let's do it. Technical leadership, expert leadership. I know what I'm talking about. This is really going to work. Okay? And this actually gets people to work for more than when you're just looking at them. They'll actually work when you turn your back a little bit. Because now they start to believe that there's actually something more to it than just getting noticed to get the raise or getting noticed to get fired. Okay? The next two are the ones that the literature sometimes argue don't exist. And the first one is called authentic leadership. You're important. What you do makes a difference. So let's do this. Now, as a community volunteer organizer, this is my big tool. Okay? I go out there and I show people in the community that you matter. You made a difference. And they call me up and say, can I please volunteer for you again, sir? Because the feeling and the thrill of being able to actually be important for a moment was actually really special. And in my company, when I had my biotech software company, we fell on economic hard times, as small startup companies often do, and my staff offered to work for me for nothing. Because the work that we're doing is so important. We need to do this. You start then to see the power of authentic leadership. You show people that they matter as individuals, and what they do really makes a difference. Last week I spoke about the example with the rubbish runners and running alongside of them and explaining to them how important what they did was and seeing how that changed the quality of cleanup in my neighborhood. And you can see that every person matters in some way, and if you show each person why they are important, they'll work harder for you. And they'll do more for you. And you won't have to pay them more cash because you're paying them in something that's more important than that. You're paying them in being allowed to believe that they are worth getting up out of bed for. And going back to the biology, preservation of self is hard work. Why bother? Why bother is because I actually made a difference today. I actually made a difference. It's worth it.
I think that's what most volunteers say when they are asked, why do you volunteer? Because we think we can make a difference. We think we can make things better.
Yes, and that's precisely how you have to work with volunteer. I mean, that's precisely why that's my strongest one in volunteers. The last one is the one that a lot of the literature says never happens. And again, it's one that I love a lot, and I use it frequently. Servant leadership. I'm doing this. Are you with me? My best example of servant leadership is I came home from the office one day, and there's rubbish strewn all over the end of the cul-de-sac, and there's three or four parents sitting on their little balconies screaming at these kids, and they looked at me and said, Mr. B, because that's what they call me, said, Mr. B, look what these kids have done. Sort them out and get them to clean it up. Didn't say a word. I walked out in the street and started picking up rubbish. After I picked up a few pieces, I looked around and said, who's with me? One kid laughed and ran away. The rest of them jumped in and helped. The parents were stunned. They couldn't believe I didn't yell at one kid. I didn't say anything to anybody. All I did was start picking up the rubbish, look around and say, who's with me? That street was spotless. Okay? That's servant leadership. And you don't have to pay people more for it. You don't have to lean over them and check over them on it. Okay? I mean, one day in my software company that I had, I swept the floor and took out the rubbish, and my staff saw me. And I found out that I had a big meeting and that it's about how embarrassing it was that their CEO was taking out the rubbish, and I never saw that rubbish left full again. I never said a word. I never paid anybody to do it.
I think that's what mothers usually do.
It's often used by mothers. Servant leadership is real, and it's very powerful. Now, in a society, going back to the Gluckman Report, if we have a society that's built on authentic reward and coercive leadership, that tends to create a very mean society where everybody's looking at what they can get away with. Okay? Reward and punishment. And this is precisely what the Gluckman Report says we've gone too far towards. However, in order for society to really work, you have to motivate people. People need hope. And to get hope, you have to use authentic and servant leadership. People need to know that they matter. Sometimes they need to be informed by expert leadership, such as the Gluckman Report itself could be considered expert leadership. Okay? Sometimes associative leadership is a good thing. All right? And it can be used very powerfully there as well. When you start working with those other forms of leadership, society tends to move more towards the direction of the kind of supportive society and further away from the mean-spirited, punishment-based society that Peter Gluckman says. Who said this. This is the Gluckman Report that said this, that said we've gone too far towards.
The findings.
Yes. So this is what I use when I teach leadership. And when I've studied leadership, it was one of the most powerful tools that I found is understanding these seven sources of power.
That mean-spiritedness, I wonder how it comes about. How does the culture become so mean-spirited? Is it from many angles, or is it driven by the government's policies?
Go back to basic biology. Basic biology is preservation of self. So preservation of self means that everyone will try to get more for themselves. Given no restrictions, no limits, each person wants to get more for themselves.
So, you mean the greed is part of human biology?
No, greed is, this is not greed. Greed is when that desire to get more for yourself spirals out of control to where you want more for the sake of having more. Okay? So this basic underlying urge to want more for self drives people to want to get more for themselves. Okay? If you put them in a situation where they don't have a lot of chance of getting more for themselves unless they cheat or do something around the backside, you know, or unless they get pat somebody's back pocket or something like that, they start doing that kind of behavior. If you put them in a situation where they get more for themselves if they work together and cooperate and support better, then they'll start doing that. Greed is what happens when you leave this biological urge unchecked. Society is what happens when we take that biological urge and direct it in a positive way.
Mm. So who's the we?
We is each and every one of us.
Where does it start? It doesn't start alone. It has to be a movement.
No, it doesn't. It starts alone. Okay? One person at a time is all it takes. So you do it, and it affects some people around you. Maybe you'll do it in your family, and your family will have that. Maybe you can do it from... But what I'm really talking about today is how you do it from the top of an organization to get it to go down. Because it becomes, as you point out, it's a lot more powerful when you do that, okay? But it's not restricted to that, and that's what I was arguing against. It doesn't just have to be that way.
I think there's always portions of society who are empathetic to people less fortunate. If they're able to, they're very supportive, giving finances and so on. And there's the other that is telling you, this is our government policy. If you don't do this, this will happen.
I'm pointing out here.
And that's what I just want to tell you, that Youthline are one of the organizations that young people phone if they're feeling depressed or anything like that. And they've done that for many years.
Yeah.
The last government cut their funding so that they lost half their staff. You know, and then you talk about, oh, what pity we have high suicide when you take away funding from an organization that helps.
Right. And this is part of the mean-spirited sort of a society that we get into when everything is done simply for, because the boss said so, you got a reward or you got punished. That's all there is to it. There's nothing else. It's real simple, real clean cut. Okay? So if you're running the youth hotline, how much cash did you make? What was your profit? Sorry, you made no profit. What's the point?
Well, how much did it cost us?
Yeah, why are we spending money on this when you're not giving me any return? Okay, there's no reward. Okay, we're cutting it. And this is the kind of mean-spirited thinking that occurs when the society is led using legitimate reward and coercive leadership. If you shift to a society that's being led using expert, authentic, and servant leadership, the whole society thinks differently. People start asking, what problem did you solve with this program?
Your measurements are different.
Right. You're no longer looking at simplistic cash reward for me now. You're looking at what kinds of benefits did we get for the group, for us. So, I mean, another program sometime will talk about the whole concept of how you measure social welfare. And it's an argument that I've had with many ministers of social welfare from different countries, of simply asking them, what is your primary point of having a social welfare program in the first place, upon which you measure the effectiveness of your programs?
Well, they usually do it by, are we getting value for money?
I'm not going to get into the question right now. Mm. I'm not going to get into the question right now. All I'm going to tell you is that's a question that I've never had answered by a minister of social welfare from any government in any country. I've never found one who was willing to actually put an answer down to attempt to address why we have the thing in the first place and on that basis, they will be measuring the failure or success of their programs. Okay, so without that, you get into a very difficult state. Now, going here, this is talking about the style of leadership changes the paradigm for what you think is a good measure and how people interact with each other. How do you talk to your friends if everything is about what you can get as a reward and punishment or what you can get away with or get over on somebody? Okay? How do you talk to your friends if the society is built upon how do I get more by creating a better, more interactive thing? So real briefly, I'll go through now the seven styles of leadership and why they don't work for me. So the first one is called autocratic, which is essentially the same as legitimate power. The second one is called democratic, which basically means you lead by compromise and vote. And everything is a vote. The next four are all pretty much the same. So you have strategic, transformational, team leadership, and cross-cultural leadership, and facilitative leadership. Sorry, the next five. Now, it turns out, every person I've ever spoken to redefines those items, those types of leadership as, I'm doing it. Whatever I'm doing, that's what it is. Because that's the kind of, I want to be a transformational leadership leader. So whatever I'm doing, yeah, that's transformational leadership. And they're defined in such a way that you can do that. So every person redefines the terms to mean what they're doing to make it convenient for themselves. And this is why I find them very functionally non-useful. And the last one is laissez-faire leadership, which basically means you do nothing. You let everybody do whatever they want. Okay, so this is why I find those to be very unhelpful. Now, if we go back and we look at our styles of leadership, we look at the style of leadership of the previous government, not taking sides, just the style of leadership of the previous government was very much legitimate, reward, coercive, with a heavy dose of associative leadership. Okay, those are the main tools of leadership that the John Key government used and used very effectively. Now we come in and we see the Jacinda Ardern-led government. And one of the first things that happens, there's a really interesting thing that happened. There's been two very interesting things that have happened in Parliament from a leadership concept about here. And the first one is, what happened with the Speaker of the House? Now, the Speaker of the House, Jacinda Ardern, decided that she wanted the Speaker of the House to be unanimously, to be accepted across the board, both parties. And so what she did is she gave a gift to her prime adversary and said, right, I will let you select the deputy speaker from your people. We have the votes to put in the speaker and the deputy, but I will let you select the deputy speaker in exchange for across the board unanimous support for both the speaker and the deputy speaker. Now, this whole idea of giving a gift to your adversary, actually working with your adversary, is very much in the spirit of servant leadership. And is very much in the spirit of your authentic leadership, okay? Actually, you're our adversary, but you're not all evil. You're not all bad. We're actually going to trust you enough to believe that you have something to say, and so much so that we're even going to allow you to select the speaker, this deputy speaker, because even though you're not in power, your view matters to us. You see how that kind of sets that kind of relationship. Now, that was a very powerful move, and it really set the tone for how people will interact with each other. When you have an adversary, do you smack them down and kick them when they're down, or do you offer a hand and work with them and say, right, you're my adversary, I don't like the way you're doing this, but I'm still willing to work with you where we can, because we're still all in this together.
And their decision was?
And the response was, because Ardern had negotiated unanimous support, the whip did not bother to check whether they had the numbers in Parliament. Turned out they were actually short. And National went in and used that as an opportunity to renege on their deal and try to negotiate something different. Okay? Now, what's really interesting is the response of many National supporters to say, oh, hey, that's politics. That's the way it works. Well, actually, is it? Do we want to have a society? So this is basically, this is actually the definitive way that you've demonstrated that the leadership has created a culture where people think that it's actually okay to cheat. If you can get away with it, it's okay to cheat. You see? If you can get away with it, that's just how we work together, isn't it? And what they've done is every time a national follower says, "Hey, you know, Jacinda's got to smarten up. That's the way we roll." What they're saying is that they're confirming that what I'm saying here about the power of the leadership to establish the culture that creates this meanness in how ordinary people interact on the street. How we talk to our children, how we talk to our employees, how we talk to people in our club.
Because, hey, that's politics.
Hey, that's just the way people interact. And if you turn your back, you know, you just need to not be so naive to think that I'm not going to take advantage of you. Because that's the way we roll. And so you have people spending, you know, $50 in petrol and $100 in ammunition to steal $20 worth of cigarettes from a dairy. Because, hey, that's the way we roll nowadays with this culture, you know? It's like, who cares? What's the difference? That's just the culture. And this is what, so every time you hear a national supporter saying that about what National did, they are absolutely validating the power of the leadership to establish that culture.
So we have to support Jacinda trying to bring a culture of kindness.
We actually have to support all of our leaders to bring not a culture of kindness, but a culture of working together in a positive way. Okay? I actually would like to see National working to hold labor to account on policy, where National has differences in the policy and what they believe it should be. And they think if National thinks labor is wasting money, I don't want to hear them insulting their bald heads or their lipstick on pigs. I want to see them putting out to the public where they think the holes in those financial policies are and exposing labor, where they think labor's got it wrong. Okay?
Well, the first thing they asked is, why haven't you started building houses? And they said, well, you know, that's because the last government never kept their word.
Yeah, so let's try. It's better if we can have the discussion without getting into a point of whether you'd like National or labor better. Mm-hmm. In reality, I support both parties, okay? I like the way that, in terms of what I'm discussing here, I like what labor has done to build a culture where people will interact in a more positive and supportive way. And I've tried to show where I can see that National has built a culture where people interact in a more punitive and mean-spirited way. And that culture can be led from the top. This is not to say that National is inherently bad or labor is inherently good. Simply that an example to show that you can build culture from the top.
Thank you, Lenny, very much. And thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10 past 10. And if you've missed this program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom, one word. And we would like to thank our sponsor, Nature Bee.